Good evening, everyone. My name is Pam Stack. I'm your host, and this is Authors on the Air. We're proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. Welcome to the show tonight. I hope you are all doing well. We're halfway through the week. That's a good thing. I want to give a shout out, first of all, to author Robert Gregory Brown, who not only writes the most fantastic suspense and thriller novels, he is a very fine musician and composer. He created and plays our theme music, so thank you very much, Rob. I appreciate that. As you know, this month is Women's History Month, and Authors on the Air is celebrating Women's Writers Month. Tonight, I have a very special guest with me. She's a Florida gal. I love that. Our kind of ships have passed in the night. She's on the East Coast. I'm on the West Coast. We kind of go to the same conferences, and I've seen her in book signings, but we've never actually spoken before, and I hope tonight to make up for that. Elaine Vietz is an incredible mystery writer. She's got about 28 books out there. She writes in all different kinds of mysteries, which is really a hoot. Her best-selling books are called the Dead End Job series, and it's kind of a humorous, satiric look at minimum wage jobs, but with a twist, because Private Eye Helen Hawthorne takes a different type of a low-paying job, and mystery ensues. There is also the Mystery Shopper series of Josie Marcus. We're going to go ahead and talk to Elaine tonight about all those wonderful books and about what she's got coming up next down the pipeline. She's also, by the way, an Agatha and an Anthony and a Lefty Award winner, and she's been nominated I can't tell you how many times, I don't know. She's very, very popular. It's my pleasure to welcome to the show my Florida sister, Elaine Vietz. Elaine, welcome so much to the show.
Well, thank you. I hope I can live up to that introduction. At last we get to talk.
I know. It's been so long, hasn't it been? It's crazy.
Way too long.
We've been talking about this for quite a while. I'm delighted that you're here, and welcome. Congratulations on all your successes. It warms my heart when I see terrific women writers getting the accolades they deserve, and you certainly have had a lot of accolades. When you won your first Agatha, or your first Anthony, or the Lefty, how did you feel?
I was stunned. I wasn't expecting to win. And somebody had to poke me and go, "You won." So I would go up on stage. Because
really?
I didn't even have anything prepared, because I was up against some really important writers. So I thought, well, I'm not going to win. But, you know, it really was an honor just to be nominated. And,
but it's a heck of a lot
better
to win, isn't it? It's a heck of a lot better to win.
It is. Yeah. I mean, I have done the obligatory "it's an honor to be nominated," and it is. But it's even more fun to win.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Where do your awards sit in your house?
They are in my office.
And that's where I do my writing. Do you look up at them with kind of a little twinkle in your eye and a little smirk, thinking, "That was me"? Do they motivate you to write even better and harder and really be creative?
I'm proud of them. I'm happy that I have them. But what really motivates me is my readers, and they stay in touch with emails and Facebook, and I want them to be happy with what they read. And I try to each time give them a book they want to read, which is basically a book I want to read. And it was Joanne Sinchuk at Murder on the Beach who got me into writing the Dead End Job series. Because
really?
How
did that come about? Yeah.
She said, "We need Florida from a woman's viewpoint." She said, we've got Carl Hiaasen, and everybody loves Carl Hiaasen. But, you know, Carl writes from a male viewpoint. And so there are strippers with hearts of gold and very young women who date very old
right.
men for their fine mind.
And crazy governor.
The crazy governor, I believe. But the other, you know, there's women when when you're mature and someone much younger, when a younger man comes up and hits on me, my first thought is not, I am hot stuff. My first thought is, what's wrong with this guy? Whereas, you know, guys go, well, I still got it, you know. I may be 60 and she may be 20, but hey, you know, I have it. And he does, and it's in his wallet. But, you know, but women don't have that attitude. And so that's kind of what Joanne meant about that viewpoint. We tend to be more realistic.
Well, this is true. And for those of you who don't know, Joanne Sinchuk runs Murder by the Beach. It is the funkiest, coolest little bookshop. She has the best authors go there for signing. Everybody knows Joanne. She has chaired Sleuth Fest several times now, and it's always an overwhelming success and tons of fun to go to. And she's a tiny little bit. She's a small little thing, but boy, she's a powerhouse when it comes to getting really great authors in her bookstore, which has been there for, gosh, Elaine, how long has Joanne been in her business? Forever, it seems like. She's kind of a landmark, isn't she?
She was there when I started, and she was all the way down in South Florida, and now she's up in Delray Beach.
Wow.
She started in Aventura.
Yes.
Was where she had her books, and all which is almost to Miami, and then she moved up to Delray. So she's been in there a good 20 years.
Yeah, she's fantastic. So if for all of you who want to do a book tour in Florida, if you are a mystery writer, that is the place to go, because she's terrific. So is it because of her you started these dead end job books? Because I crack up. Well, first of all, you said she told you we need a Florida girl, you know, a female writer. And I'm thinking, oh my God, in Florida, yeah, most girls get minimum wage jobs. I mean, it's really sad. There are not big tech jobs or anything like that here. And in some of the smaller towns, and there are a lot of smaller towns in Florida, as you well know, that's probably all there is available is small minimum wage jobs. So how did you decide on that particular character doing that particular type of a job? Did the murder come first and then Helen goes in, or did Helen go in and the murder occurred? How does that work?
The job, Helen works a different dead-end job every book. And how that started was I had been writing a newspaper series, a very dark newspaper series called the Francesca Veerling series. And that I was writing that for Bantam Dell, and then Random House bought out Bantam Dell and basically wiped out the paperback division. So I got the phone call from my agent saying, your series is dead. And it was my first series, so I was heartbroken. And I said, but I've got a contract. And he said, it's over. And I said, but they've just approved the next book. And he goes, it's dead. And I said, well, what do I do with it? And he said, throw it out and start over. Nobody wants it. I mean, that was brutal, but he was right. And he said, and it's going to be 2 years before you find another home. So it was a really tough time. My husband and I, we'd been going through one of those rat years, which happens to everyone. And he had stage 3 cancer. He's fine now, but he had that. We were being audited by the IRS, and I lost my contract.
No.
So
it was
really a lot of fun.
Year to really, when the new year came about, you were really celebrating to get that one behind you, right?
Just get rid of it, please.
I went to
work at a bookstore, it was a Barnes & Noble in Hollywood, and it was, you know, it was a very bitter time in my life because I was shelving the books of successful writers who'd start at the same time that I did. But I learned a lot. I had a wonderful boss at that place. It was Florida, so the customers were completely wacky. And
of course.
And I finally decided this is a book. I mean, this guy comes in and he's very handsome. He kind of looks like Elvis, and the young Elvis, not the old Elvis. And
right.
he's got a paperback, and it's a $6.99 paperback. And he goes, okay, I'm returning this for this. And he shows me another paperback, same price. I'm out of here. And I said, no. It's the manager has to approve it. And so I'm going, manager to the front. And the manager, of course, is running all over. She's crazy. And he says to me, well, that's stupid. And I said, yes, sir. Manager to the front. And he goes, you're an idiot. I said, yes, sir. Manager to the front. And the woman goes, and he starts telling me how dumb I am. And there's nothing I can do about it except go, manager to the front. And finally, the woman behind him says, I hate it when people don't take their medication. And the woman behind her goes, rude people stink. And all the women in that line started talking about how tired they were of public rudeness. So finally, the manager, God bless her, came to the front, checked the guy out. He slunk off, and the first woman patted me on the hand, and she goes, you hang in there, honey. You're doing a good job.
Oh, my God. What, did he think it was a library? He could go and buy one book and then keep changing them out after he finished reading them?
He did not understand the concept of computer inventory, which,
right,
you know, you have to check
sure.
it back in. And
sure.
it, otherwise, anybody could do that. You know,
well,
they could
sure.
just take any book off the shelf and say, I read this, I'm getting this, okay? You know, so these were the people that I put in. I put him in, but I also put in the women who stuck up for me, who were standing in that line.
How lovely. What a great story. What a great story. Go ahead.
Well, that book became Murder Between the Covers. And I just started doing, now this series started when there were a lot of jobs.
Right.
And I had two great advantages in Florida. I showed up on time and I spoke English, and this made me a highly valuable employee for these skills.
For those who don't know, really, South Florida, you know, if you speak English fluently and can connect sentences, really, you are considered higher educated. Because who knows what language you're going to bump up against, and it's all good. It makes it a very interesting place. But Elaine, let me ask you this. You really don't have to look far beyond our borders to find really good stories. You just open the paper or you look at the news and you think, well, there's a story to be told in a book, right?
Well, did you see the one today about the Frito-Lay truck that was hit
yes.
by a beer truck? And
so
all over I-95 are chips and beer, you know. And they said it took the cops a while to clean it up, and I have this vision of police, you know, standing around with beer cans and bags of chips, which I'm sure didn't happen. But
well, it's
but
just
only
like a couple
Florida.
Years back. Yeah, when they had the Brinks truck that had an accident or something, and all the money flew out the back, and they had it in one of the poor sections of town in Miami, and of course, the money's flying and the breeze is blowing and the neighbors are out, and amazingly that anyone brought that money back, but they did. But of course it was never all accounted for. You know, I tease with Paul Levine, who I'm sure you know, and everybody else, I say, you don't have to look far for a story in South Florida. I don't know about the North so much, but I'm sure they're there too. 'Cause you know, we may be the southernmost part of the country, but we are definitely not the South. The South doesn't start till North Florida, as you well know.
Absolutely.
Too.
And really, though, it is hard to write fiction in Florida because the reality is so weird. How can you make stuff up?
You don't really have to, and people say, oh, no, that's not really going to happen. And you say, oh, yeah, it did.
Oh, this is a state that has a python hunt, you know?
I mean, on an alligator hunt now because there's so, you know, so many of them all over the place. You know, there is a place on the West Coast, a very large independent bookseller. They keep growing in leaps and bounds. And I was meeting Randy Wayne. I'm sorry, Tim Dorsey up there, because, you know, Tim is a Florida guy too, who has a wacky character. And he stepped out of his car. He was going to do a book signing and a reading. And in this shopping center, it's a little strip shopping center, and there is on the side of the little pond that's in the center of the shopping center, an alligator sunning himself. And apparently that alligator is there all the time. And it's been named. And so I looked at Tim and I said, I see you brought your friends. And he says, he's here every time I come up here to the store. You know, where else do you kind of like shrug your shoulders and there's the alligator sunning himself on the pond in the middle of the shopping center, right? Oh, God. I know. So, you know, congratulations. So you obviously dusted yourself off and got back up and started writing the Dead End Job series. But you also have another series, too. You have a series about Josie. So let's talk about her for a little bit, and let's hear about Josie, because I like her too.
Well, Josie is a mystery shopper, and my Dead End Job books are set in South Florida, but Josie is set in my hometown of St. Louis, Missouri. And my my publisher, which is Penguin, had the Dead End Job series was doing well, and they said, we'd like you to do a second series, and we'd like you to try out for it. Would you like to write about a mystery shopper? And I said, well, my mother was a mystery shopper.
Was she really?
In the 60s, my dad was very old school, you know, no wife of mine is ever going to work. He meant outside the home because she had four kids. Now, you can't tell me that's not work. But anyway.
Right. Did the shopping, managed the budget, did all the other stuff. And
yeah, clean the house, babysit the kids.
Sure, yeah. Sure.
But he decided that mystery shopping, and she did it for the Kroger stores, was not really a job because it was shopping. So she would get us off to school, drive up to 110 miles a day to various stores, you know, with a list of things to buy, and write her report and get home by 3 so she could have his dinner on the table at 5, but that wasn't work.
Oh, jeez Louise. And still do all the other stuff, too.
Yeah.
Did she like that job, by the way?
She loved it. She saw herself as a suburban spy, you know, and she really felt that she was representing, you know, the American shopper, because she used to go with her best friend, and she would tell me, the only thing that's more invisible than one housewife is two.
It's two, right. That's an interesting
And so they wouldn't get good service, and she would write it down. And she felt that, you know, this was her duty, that all of these women who were neglected and dissed, she stood for them.
God bless her heart. So she was your inspiration for Josie the mystery shopper.
Right. And the publisher liked the series, and it was supposed to be 3 books. And I stopped it at 10.
Go ahead.
So, it was a cozy series, and there's only so much you can do with a cozy. I got Josie happily married. She had a teenage daughter, but then, you know, I can't kill the husband. I can't kill the daughter. I can't even kill the cat. So, what else are you going to do with?
You
can never kill a cat.
You can
kill, I don't care how many people, but you cannot kill a cat in a cozy mystery.
Absolutely. No. I love the fact that I was looking over your website again. And by the way, for any of you listening, you've really got to go to Elaine's website. It's a riot and a half. But you have pictures of your characters' pets. You have pictures and little videos and all, and it's really, really fun to watch it, to some of these videos. But you also do a really interesting little bio about yourself. And if you will allow me, please, this is what you write in the first chapter. You say, "It's midnight on a moonless night in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. From my office window, I see boats with no running lights slipping down the intercoastal waterway. What illegal cargo are they carrying? Drugs? Guns? People? I've used them all in my dead end job mysteries. I love that. Then you say, "You look across the canal. My window overlooks the million-dollar condo where mysterious neighbors hold parties in the dead of night. Everyone dresses in black evening clothes. They became the inspiration for your short Vampire Hours." So I understand how South Florida becomes your go-to character for your book characters. And then you also write that one of your snowbird neighbors turned out to be a drug dealer. You said, "I should have known that a pilot didn't make enough money to own a Porsche, a Harley, a state-of-the-art sound system, a house, and a beachside condo unless he was flying in very special cargo." And you had no idea he was a drug dealer until he didn't return to Florida one winter. I love these little stories. And you do the same for the Midwest, where you you have Josie's stories start with the people in St. Louis. You have such a creative mind to do that. I'm so impressed with that. But then when we were talking before the show, you said, "I have something new that's happening, and I'm going decidedly darker." Let's talk about that.
Yes. I started out writing very dark novels. My first series, the Francesca Veerling series, was set in a newspaper. And I'd been a newspaper reporter for 27 years.
Wow.
And I was fired for insubordination. I was extremely proud of that.
You know,
and
what did you do to be insubordinate as a journalist? It's amazing to me that could actually happen.
Well, what happened was my husband, we were living in St. Louis, and I was a columnist, and I was very popular as a columnist. I had a lot of readers, and my husband had a job offer in Washington, D.C., and he really wanted that job. And so I asked the paper if I could go for a year to Washington, and he could have the job, and they said, sure. And so I flew back and forth at my expense, so that most of my readers didn't even know I was out of town. And I wrote the column as if I was still in St. Louis, and I kept it going. And at the end of the year, I asked for another year, and they said no. And I said, "But most people don't know I'm gone." And they said, "You have to come back." And I thought, okay, third-rate paper, first-rate husband, that's an easy decision. So, so they fired me on New Year's Day, and the readers went ballistic. They signed petitions. They picketed the paper. It was wonderful.
How terrific.
And so the paper wouldn't hire me back, but they offered me my column back. And I did it for about 6 months, but by that time the newspaper business was tanking, and I thought, this isn't fun anymore. So,
and the blue is off the rose by that time. You have to admit, when they give you that much crap, you know you're going to go back and make them look good. But the heck with them, right? Now, is that paper still published right now? By the way,
it is. It's the Post-Dispatch in St. Louis, and it's still published. You know, it's still hanging on. But you all know these aren't good times for newspapers. So.
No, they're not. Who would have thunk it? You know, who would have thunk it? I've spoken to, and I know you and I know the same book reviewers in South Florida, and I always think, wow, you know, here was this one big newspaper that decided to eliminate book reviews from their paper product and relegated them to online. I don't know how many people do you think are actually reading book reviews online from a newspaper?
Very few. It's a shame because there are a lot of readers there, and newspapers, by definition, attract readers. So the people who read newspapers also read books. You would think they would go hand in hand, but newspapers are sold on this idea of sports. Let's put the Marlins on the front page. And, the Marlins are fine. But
the Marlins are terrible. Let's be serious.
All right. The Marlins are lousy, and their stadium is one of the worst, okay?
It is, and it was such a, it's a tax suck. Let's be serious. I want to talk about your new series. So let's see that, because you have two books coming out this year, and they're decidedly different. You have is it your last Dead End job, or you will continue to write that series? Because that The Art of Murder is coming out in May. But
The Art of Murder is coming out in May, and it's set at Bonnet House, which is a very quirky museum in Fort Lauderdale. If you haven't been to Bonnet House, if you haven't been there, you have to go. I am not a fan of museums because, to me, let's pay $10 to look at some rich guy's old furniture is not my idea of a good time. But Bonnet House was owned by Frederick Clay Bartlett, and he was married to his wife, obviously. He's married to his wife. But the two of them were artists, and they were funny, and they were quirky. And her name was Evelyn, and she outlived him by a long time. She lived to be 109, and for her birthday, he built her a bar. I don't mean a Rathskeller. I mean her own freestanding bar on the property. And she had all sorts of wonderful pets, including pet monkeys. And some of the monkeys are still at Bonnet House. And
are they really?
There's a band of, I think, three or four. Unfortunately, they're all males, so that's going to be the end of the line. But she got this last troop of monkeys when a bar burned down. And so the monkeys migrated over to Bonnet House, and they live in the trees.
Honestly,
they eat cashews.
You cannot make this. This is not a joke. This really does happen in Florida, listeners. It really does. It sounds like Elena's describing her book, and she probably is a little bit of it. But trust me when I tell you, these are the things that happen in Florida. And are we immune to it now, Elaine, do you think?
I'm beginning to think so, because one of my books was Dying to Call You. And I said to my editor, I sent her an email, and I said, is there enough weird stuff going on in this book? And she goes, Elaine, she sent me an email and said, Elaine, you really need to cut the lesbian couple. And I said, I'm not sure there's enough weird stuff going on in this book. And she said, well, you've already got sex in coffins. And I said, oops, I did. I mean, I'd been living in Florida a long time, and I'd forgotten. Yes, that's weird. I did test. It is possible to have sex in a coffin. I didn't have sex in a coffin, but I did look at a coffin. There's a coffin showroom in Aventura. And where you can buy, Aventura, if you're not used to South Florida, is known as God's Waiting Room. And they have a discount casket place there.
But interestingly enough about Aventura, though, is that it is the wealthiest probably 2 square miles or 1.7 square miles in South Florida. And it is all condominiums and all shopping centers. It's very high-end shopping centers, but there also are very discounted shopping centers there. It is the heart of our Jewish community, who we love, and they're so funny. I know the woman who runs the, you know, the marketing group up there. And they are tons of fun. But if you will see people dripping in jewels going for a bagel and a schmear someplace. You know what I'm talking about, right?
And this is the best part of Florida. There is a discount coffin place there. And so I went there, and yes, you can get a coffin. It's about as wide as the back seat of a 56 Chevy, and it has a mattress. So, you know, it is possible to have sex in a coffin.
I just don't even want to imagine you in there. How tall are you, Elaine?
6 feet.
I just love that. You'd have to get the extra long coffin for a female. You'd have to get the boy's coffin, right?
I guess. I mean, you know, it's kind of like when I was a bridesmaid. I always had to pay extra because I needed the extra long dress.
Extra long dress. How funny.
So no matter how ugly the dress was, it cost me an additional $10.
Tell us about Death Investigator Angela Richmond. This is a new series.
This is my new series.
This is coming out on the 2nd. It's called Brainstorm. I'm very interested in this particular book because as much as I like the fun and the cozy and everything else, I really like the darker stuff too.
To the dark side. And I went back to St. Louis University. And I took the medical legal death investigators training course. And a death investigator works for the medical examiner's office. And when there's a murder, the death investigator has charge of the body, and she photographs it, measures it, looks at the wounds, the whole bit. And then the police have charge of the crime scene. And you need special training to be a death investigator. So I took this course for forensic professionals, and I thought they would think, oh, mystery writer. But they were really nice to me, and they were smart, and they were funny, and they were very helpful. And it was a really intense course. It lasted a week. It was 8 hours a day, and it was lecture after lecture about blood spatter, bullet wounds, car accidents, let's see. Oh, what to do in case a plane crash. That was fun. I had to fly home. I was a temporary vegetarian, but it was absolutely fascinating, and I'm glad I took it. And so I based a whole series on a death investigator, and Janet Rudolph of Mystery Readers International, which is a big fan-based organization, said so far as she knows, there are no death investigator courses. So this starts in a mythical county called Choteau County, which is kind of based on West County in St. Louis, so I can tell all those stories about rich people I couldn't when I was a reporter.
There you go. How funny.
But it's very forensic-heavy.
You know, some of the players in the background, like the death investigators, are really fat. They're really amazing people, aren't they?
Yes, they are, and they're very professional. You know, you watch these TV shows and you see these the medical examiner, and he's eating a sandwich while he's autopsying a body. I mean, just ask one what they think of that.
Yeah.
They'll go crazy.
Now, although truthfully, the Miami County, you know, coroner's office has had some bizarre coroners, but I know some that are very, very serious.
Hello? You're clicking out on me. Hello?